footy, a con, a racket, where deals make a packet, a hothouse for shockers in shorts, or a highly skilled art, where those who take part exemplify all good in sport. If you're egghead or dippy, you can bet your sweet bippy these fellas aren't all froth and fizz. Concise, erudite, and most always right, they'll tell it to you like it is. Ladies and gentlemen, the Coulda-bean champions.
Oh, can't you hear the finals in the timbre of the Unc's voice? Jeff Richardson here with the Coulda-bean champions. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, Torchman.
Yes, and I was going to say there wasn't a lot of woof-woofing going on last night, unfortunately, and more of that later.
Well, you're at the wrong place, of course, Greg Champion.
Yes, good morning to you, and good morning to me,
Billy Baxter.
Hello, everyone.
Ian Cover, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Richard. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, footy fans.
Yeah, the real story was the early game. PNG got up, won the International Cup.
They've won the flag.
They've come from behind, knocked off New Zealand. They've won their first ever International Cup.
Well, and look, Greg and I can tell you something, and we can tell you for free.
What can we tell them?
We were privileged yesterday to be at a function where Ronald Dale Barassi was speaking, and he actually said that he was up in Papua New Guinea some years ago, and he saw them playing football, and all it needed was some far-sighted, visionary administrator to go up there, and that could have been one of the first, you know, outposts or frontiers of football, but they let it go, and you know what happened? Rugby league got in there, and that's their go now, and everything. And it's taken till now for them to get back into the Aussie rules scene.
But he spotted them first.
He spotted them.
He did a sheedy.
He did.
But you know, and they had a lot of natural ability.
Yeah.
But he didn't respect that.
No. But I'll tell you what, Ron had seen how good they were 20 or 30 years
ago.
Well,
actually, I can even go back further than that.
Oh.
Because during the...
I wouldn't try and out Ron wrong.
Well, no, I think he might have been looking about the same time, because during conscription times, of course, like not everybody got sent off to...
Is that where you were hiding? That you're in New Guinea?
Not everybody got sent off to Vietnam. Some people got sent to other places like Malaya, and a player that I played with, Mick Mulligan, got sent up to Papua New Guinea, and he actually coached a couple of teams up there and got them playing a bit of footy back in the late 60s, early 70s time. Yeah. But Ron would have been there about that time too, of course.
Well, so it was wartime. It was wartime. And they said to Mick, you go and coach some...
It wasn't a lot of war going on in Papua New Guinea at that time.
Andreas, who was a guest on the show earlier, last Saturday, Andreas from the Swedish...
Yes, last
weekend.
Yes.
Are they the Elks?
Swedish Elks, yep.
Came second in the International Brownlow by one vote.
Oh, no.
Who won the International Brownlow? Is it called the Sheedy Medal? I'm going to stop all those Sheedy. After hearing Ron yesterday, I think Ron actually invented sheets.
Champ said before he's done a sheet. Champ, you couldn't have got that more wrong.
Oh, yes.
But look, sheets is sheets, but before there was sheets, there was Ron. Mike Finn. From Ireland won the Sheedy medal. So Mickey Finn.
PNG first.
Yeah, look, they've played in two grand finals previously and got pretty toweled up.
We've been waiting 72 years to win this grand final.
They've been toweled up the previous grand finals they've made, and they were a long way behind at quarter time, and they've got up and won it.
Kiwi second. Where was it played? Oh, it was played at the
grand finals at the G.
And did the other teams get to do the march past, or the...
No, they were playing. They all day yesterday. Mm. Yesterday, yeah, they played off these playoff games to decide the finishing order first through to 16.
A bit like the Olympics.
You might recall yesterday that last week when I was down at Geelong, and out on the back we had on the St Mary's ground we had Denmark playing South Africa. Before the main game last week, when they'd finished, all the boys from Denmark and South Africa in their tracksuits came in. Hmm. Onto the main oval at Kinnear Park and did a lap. Waved
nice.
The crowd and had the flags. It was fantastic. Very warmly received. So I think there might have been,
What sort of footwear did they have?
Oh, I didn't get to look at that closely.
No doubt there was outrage at their uniforms.
No. They look
because,
pretty good.
Because there always is when the Aussies go into
it. No, everyone else gets it there, right.
That's right. There was no sucked ice blocks there.
No. So I think the teams might have done some sort of parade like that round at the G last Saturday or something, not last night. So Were there then suggestions during the main game that perhaps some of the PNG players should have stayed out and helped the Dogs out? Or
I didn't hear any. But
did they have any tall timber?
No.
I didn't see the game.
Any PNG, it's not the way they play.
Any PNG players under the radar as far as recruiting goes for the...
I wouldn't say so.
Because the Dogs could have done with a bit of tall timber last night.
What they could have done with was
a bit of...
look, I hate to have serious footy talk.
Well, I'm seriously nervous.
I hate to sound like I've embraced modern terms in football. Mm. I thought what they lacked was big bodies at the contest. Forgive me for using that phrase.
BBC.
They lacked a bit of oomph in the middle, I think.
Well,
they couldn't get their hands on a billy.
No.
The Hawks had more in and under types.
That's right. And when they did get their hands on it, they coughed it up.
Magnificent.
I can't write this quick. Big bodies at the contest, in and unders, and coughed it up.
Yeah, that is magnificent. They did too. Right?
Yes. Yes, there was a few guys who went missing.
Right? No, for a final, a bit disappointing.
It was.
It wasn't disappointing
if you're a Hawks supporter or if you just wanted to see a few champions strut their stuff.
Well, Footscray kept having a go, but they just couldn't get any. No. The more it went, the further behind. Mm. They get to the last quarter, they started winning it out of the middle. Lo and behold, they start kicking a few goals.
Yeah. Well, my moment was when Bruce on the telly turned to Lethal.
I was just about to say, I know it's coming because I was going to say to you,
him, is he the best player?
Don't say more. I was going to say, you can come in with a torch, but you will finish this. I was just going to preface it same thing by saying there have been some big statements made in football, and there's been the occasional member of this panel, so I'm about to make a BS big statement in 28 years, but I reckon that I heard the biggest big statement last night, Torch, which was?
And he said to Lethal, is he the best player you've seen?
Potentially the best player.
Oh, yes, that's right. It was qualified.
Is he potentially the best player?
And
to which the answer is,
well, first of all,
according to advice I have received.
First of all, Lethal said yes, and then I think Bruce came back with, well, listen to who's talking.
Then
Lethal said, oh, the best under 180 centimetres.
Over 190.
Over 190. That's right. The best over 190. That's right.
Oh, look, why muck around? The bloke is fantastic.
He is.
Lethal didn't muck around. He said yes, he is. Didn't qualify it at all, apart from his...
Well, Ted wouldn't have been over 190, would he?
No.
Well, how do you feel about these antics after the eighth goal?
We're on radio, Chance.
You can see me.
Doing the high fives to the crowd.
Oh, no, they're swinging the arms and...
he's been watching Usain Bolt, that's all.
Well, he was described as Usain Bolt of footy.
And the other one where Brian Lake Knee Harris beckoned him to come in as he was taking
the
ball.
That was a beauty, wasn't it? I thought the umpy should have brought him all the way down to the other goal screen. That would have been a fair whack.
Will they be having a look at that one on the video review, do you think?
Only if they want to put it on Comedy Capers.
I'm going to tell you. It's a bit like any other player had done it. The paper would be full of today.
If Bazza had done it,
they'll be very closely. He could be under scrutiny for the shove he gave them. That was a charge in the old days.
Well, I think it was a bit of like a don't argue from the Three Stooges, really.
That was where you needed Frank Vergona umpire.
He would have just
run in and he would have immediately brought the mark.
It would have been 150 metre penalty.
The goal square at the other end of the ground.
I thought the 50 actually was a bit light on.
Yes. Me too. I mean, there's a big arc that tells you where 50 is. You would have thought he could have figured it out.
I think that's actually where he ended up.
Yeah. And if it was calculated to put Buddy off his game, did it work?
No.
There's a bit there to worry the reigning Premier.
Yes, I think so.
Here's a bit more serious football talk for you. Andrew has got it right. The league is running magnificently. The whole thing of the draft and the evening up. Yeah, let's have a look at the season, how it's finished. Up until almost the very end of the season, right down to 10th, had a reasonable chance of making it. But for Kelvin Moore hitting the post... Richmond would have finished ahead of St Kilda, and St Kilda ended up with a double chance. You take away the widely accepted dominance of Geelong, and you're about. I'm about to say, look at what a fabulously even competition it is. And then last night, take away the dominance of Geelong. Look how red hot favourites would Hawthorn be.
Exactly.
But that's not it. More praise for Andrew. If this were the case, if you were to take away Geelong's dominance, Hawthorn would be red-hot favourites. Mm. They have completely rebuilt using the draft and got to that point within 5 years.
Mm.
So, Melbourne supporters, it's not that far away.
Their
end serious football talk.
That was a lot of sensible football talk.
But the thing that they've managed to do is to recruit a lot of blokes who aren't household names, Lewis and Sewell and Murphy.
Didn't that Lewis play well last night?
And then they've trained them up to play a certain way. There's no doubt about that.
And one of the benefits of having the overhead camera last night, you could see the cluster in action.
Oh, you could you?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. I must come around and watch it at your joint then. You must have a TV that's 185 inches wide.
It was like watching a flea circus.
I've actually got one of those. I've got one of those large-ish TVs now. And fair dinkum, I thought I was looking through one of those kaleidoscope things you did as a kid, you know, with all the colours changing on the end.
Or you got the binoculars turned around the wrong way.
Oh, so torchy. I was
doing one that looked like the one that Harvey Norman had when he first started business.
You're with the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Local Radio. Good to have you with us. Wherever you are, we've been tracking the Victorian Women's Football League all season, and everyone was expecting, well, not everyone, but a lot of people were expecting the Helen Lambert medal to go in a certain direction, and turn-ups, Cecilia McIntosh just came from the clouds, plays with the Melbourne Uni Mugars, and came through and won it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys.
Yes. Is there an inquiry going on down at the league about Shannon McFerrin not actually winning her sixth medal?
Could be. I'm not sure about that.
What was the final tally, Cecilia?
I ended up with 21 votes, which was three clear of Shannon and Sarah Hammond.
Sarah Hammond, both on 18.
Mm. Yep.
And where was the count held?
It was held at Albert by the lake.
Were there just gasps around the room when Shannon didn't win?
I think so. Everyone came up and said, well done, and about time there was a bit of a change. So,
were you fancied? Were you rated highly before the count?
Everybody was saying that I had a fair shot at it, so I was pretty excited about the night. So
How were your votes spread out, Cecilia? Pretty even across the year, or did you come with a flurry toward the latter part of the season?
I started off a bit slow, I think. They skipped the first five rounds, so I'm not sure how votes were going there.
There's an idea the league could play about.
And then it just sort of started getting two votes, three votes every round. And
congratulations.
Were you leading all night?
No, I was behind at the start, probably about round eight or nine, I popped in.
That's when good players hit the front.
and so did they hold a couple of votes aside to make it a cliffhanger? The last votes, Melbourne Uni, one vote, C. Smith.
No, it was... actually, I wasn't keeping in count of it. They didn't have a tally. Only every five rounds or so they'd have a tally. Oh. So at the end, I hadn't been counting the votes and I was just like, my heart was pumping because I knew I was up there.
Fantastic.
And had no idea.
Were you on a big table with your teammates?
Yeah, with all the Melbourne Uni girls, so they were all excited.
I bet.
And Cecilia, tell us about your background in footy, how you got into playing.
I started playing last season. I came down to the club through a friend. I went and watched a couple of grand finals, the 2005 and 2006 grand finals, and was kind of watching and went, well, I'd like to play, but...
So you hadn't played footy before?
Oh, only at school,
So you have it, what you mean, at school, like having a kick at lunchtime?
No, we actually had a team.
So you had a girls' team at school? Where was that?
Hallam High School.
Okay. So you had played competitive footy before?
Well, one game. Two games.
So you were best first-year player in the comp last year?
Yes.
And you've won the medal this year?
Yep.
You are the Joel Selwood.
And what
position, if he wins the Brownlow, of course.
That's right. What position do you play?
Well, it depends on what team we're playing, really. I guess my best position is a half-back flank. I play on the ball and I play in the forward line as well. So
what do you put down to, you know, you coming into the game last year, winning the best first year, now winning the medal, to your so quickly adapting to the game and playing so well? What do you put it down to?
I guess my background in track and field with all the training I've done for my javelin throwing, that would be a big help.
You're a medalist. Commonwealth Games?
Yep, medalist. Silver at Commonwealth Games in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. So now comes the big question. How do you rate them? The silver medal at the Commonwealth Games for throwing a spear or winning the Brownlow?
Look, I'd have to say the Commonwealth Games is probably the biggest one, but I tell you what, I've never been so nervous in my life as I was last night with the count.
Quite a remarkable difference in the two disciplines, isn't there, is the... As a javelin silver medalist, it's a very solitary and isolated endeavour, yet here you are with the muggers, and it's nothing other than a team game, even though you've triumphed in terms of your personal achievement. It is certainly, the correlation is marked.
It was quite difficult for me to change into being in a team atmosphere because I'm used to doing everything on my own, getting my own rewards. If, you know, I made a mistake, it was on me. Whereas with a team, it's a team. So
up until coming down and training at the Muggers, you hadn't really been involved in other team sports. It had just been all the javelin?
No, I've done netball before. Uh-huh. With the athletic club I'm with is an association with the netball team, which I played in as well, but that was just something to do for fun.
Yeah, but playing for Coops had been out in the field.
Exactly, yeah.
Had you retired from javelin?
I made the decision to retire last year when I started playing footy because my shoulder wasn't holding up after a couple of reconstructions.
Do all javelin throwers' shoulders go?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Or elbows?
Elbows or shoulders, that's it.
So in getting the silver medal at Manchester, what did you throw there?
Through 57.42 at the games.
What was your, was that your PB?
No, my PB I'd thrown a couple of weeks earlier, which was 58.95.
And what won the gold?
58.40 something.
And was that the gold? Was Shannon McFerrin win the gold?
not on that occasion. Not on that occasion.
No, who won the gold?
Laverne Eve from Bahamas.
Is she still going around?
She was still competing at the last Commonwealth Games, I know, but I didn't see her name at the Olympics for this time, but she would be hitting around about 44 now. So.
Wow.
So are you ever tempted when you're... picked up footy to pick the footy up and sort of, you know, throw it like a jab to it?
Actually, at training, I've thrown it back and it kind of hurts my arm, so I tend to not do that too much.
Now, when you're out on the ground, of course, Cecilia's a bit of a mouthful. What do they call you when you're running around?
C-bomb.
C-bomb.
C-bomb. Okay. The C-bomb.
Have you've still got the javelin at home, I take it?
Oh, yep.
Now, here's a tip. Obviously, your footy career is just taking off. I can see you one day coaching. I reckon if you just had that javelin, keep it in the coach's box and bring it out at 3/4 time.
Look at Neil Craig and all those bike riders over there.
Are there some other girls from track and field backgrounds taking up footy like you?
Well, there's another girl in our team, Belinda Blay. She used to be a high jumper. I guess throughout the competition there's other track and field athletes, but Belinda was a nationally ranked athlete as well in high jump. So
does she go for speckies?
She does. She's a very good specky taker.
Pedigree. And Sarah Hammond, who was equal runner-up with Shannon for the medal last night, I understand she was an Olympian, is that right?
Yeah, handball, I think. I think she went to Sydney and competed in handball.
Which is slightly different to Aussie rules handball.
Just a little bit. Yeah, little
because
bit different.
Let's not allow all this talk of elite sportswomen playing women's football put anybody off who might be thinking of coming down to training for next season and having a kick. You don't have to be a Commonwealth Games medalist
to
get a game in the women's footy league.
Now, a bit of serious football talk, because I see Darabin won the grand final again this year.
Again.
Are you going to spend the summer plotting a way in which you can beat them next year?
I don't know about plotting. I guess a lot of training is going to go on, I'm going to start my training in the next couple of weeks. So. Mm.
For football, or do you mix it in with athletics?
Well, I'm going to be doing a bit of athletics over the summer, but I'm also going to do baseball this summer.
Oh, yeah?
But mainly directed at footy for next year, because that's now my main focus.
The shoulder all right for baseball? Have you got to throw it in from the outfield?
Well, I'm hoping to be an infield player, so that I don't have to throw it so far.
Or just work with throwing on the non-preferred.
Exactly. There you go.
For the listeners at home, Cecilia, I can't help noticing that you are wearing some jewellery, one in your eyebrow and one in your lip.
Yeah.
I trust you take them out when you play.
You have to. Yeah. I mean, I get hit in the head quite a lot. I don't want to be bleeding from the mouth.
Well, Cecilia, it's a great achievement in your second year of footy to have come through and won the Lambert Medal, which is the VWFL's Brownlow. And I can see you're still absolutely...
I'm still in shock.
Yeah. I wish you had worn it in, Cecilia. You have it.
I got the medal.
Oh, there it is.
We've had Shannon on the program, and she's never brought one of her five in.
We might have to get Andy to come in and take a photo.
Yeah.
It looks a bit like
the medal is now in the hands of Torch McGee. Just keep your hand on the ribbon.
I won't give it to Billy Baxter. We won't see it again.
We're further advised that the best first-year player for this year, which was you won that last year, was Jess Cameron from Melbourne Uni.
Yeah, that's correct.
We spoke to Jess during the year.
Yeah, and she's also a member of the Australian Under-21 cricket squad. So there's some, you know, multi-talented sports people playing in the women's footy.
Oh, yeah. They, you know, over the summer they all play different sports and they go to touch footy and basketball. So
that's double honours for the Muggers last night. Jess, we're surprised that you've actually come in here this morning. Did you kick on and celebrate last night?
No, actually I've been sick, so I went home and just sort of rested and...
Now, Cecilia, you've got the microphone. What I want you to do is speak directly to those young women who may be thinking about maybe having a go at women's footy but have never actually made the move. Mm. But what do you want to say to them to talk them into coming down and training?
If they're thinking about it, just do it. I reckon it's one of the best things I've ever done. I've made hundreds of new friends, not just at my club but through the league, and it's... fantastic competition, and I love playing.
And young women who are thinking about playing footy, where should they go to find out where their nearest club is and stuff like that?
I guess probably go on the VWFL website
and
check what clubs are around and go from there.
There'll be your phone number and away, and you'll be made welcome.
Yep, there you go.
And who do you barrack for, Cecilia?
St Kilda.
And who's your favourite player? Who do you model your game on?
I'd have to say Nick Riewoldt. Legend.
But you're about the same size.
but you want to play as long as Robert Harvey.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
And speaking of young women playing football, I reckon with all these multi-talented women sportsmen, a few sponsors could get on board too with the Women's Football League, because there's really something there to promote.
Yeah, well, when you start winning the footy quad, Torch, you can sponsor them personally.
Well done, Cecilia.
Yeah, well done.
Thanks for coming in and congratulations.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Cecilia McIntosh from the Melbourne Uni Muggers.
Muggers.
Won the Helen Lambert Medal. In really a shock result for the whole competition.
Shannon was expected to win her sixth.
You're listening to the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Local Radio. You just mentioned before, Covey, Torch's tips.
Mm.
We're going to examine them right after this.
Pied Piper of Paupers or Prince of Portfolio? I fill it or mince, you might do your chips on Torch's tips.
Thanks, Unc. Well, Torch.
Well, what?
How'd you go?
What happened? Well, you know what happened?
Yeah.
I was behind the pace. We actually did pick the pattern of the game perfectly.
You did very well.
But unfortunately, we were one selection behind all night. So we had Hawthorn to be in front by 24 at quarter time. They led by 25.
So we were beaten by the cluster.
I think we were beaten by the ability of the score. So in every quarter, we were one selection behind where we should have been. And so they won by 73 points. So, in fact, in the last quarter, we were two selections behind. So.
I want to withdraw my injudicious remark on air last week, where I said to you that the margin would be closer to 6 points than 60, because, in fact, it was over 60.
73, it turned out. So.
But I want to offer this lame excuse.
Go on, lame excuse away.
Late withdrawals.
Yes.
I want to say this. I've always said, no Carrazzo, no Scotland, no Carlton.
Well... lame excuses,
yes.
Patterns of the game where you were one
also,
point off.
Yes.
Same difference. We did our dough.
Round 22 also is always fraught with difficulty.
You didn't say that last week.
Well, because I didn't want to put anybody off.
Well, now that we're into the finals.
Well, we are in the finals.
How does it work now?
It works as normal, except, and I have to give thanks for this, the game is not tonight's game between the Kangaroos and the Swans.
Oh, hallelujah. You're not the only one giving thanks, Torch.
Yes, so I wasn't forced into a position of picking the Swans again.
Because I reckon they'll go all right tonight.
I think I'd be a little bit more confident if they're playing
at the
SCG.
You know what they say about that Olympic stadium for a footy ground? Mm. quarter quad punter's graveyard.
That's right. And also it's been raining up there too, so it's going to be a slow track up there tonight. No, the game is actually the one this afternoon over at Football Park.
Oh, I'll take advice from Champion.
Oh, I did. I approached Champion and I said, I'll be asking you about this, Champs, because Adelaide are playing Collingwood. I think Collingwood have got a reasonable record against Adelaide over there, have they not?
And I said to you, I don't know.
Yes.
Collingwood over there, 50-50, maybe all right.
I'd say 5% for the home ground advantage.
Yeah, I'm giving Adelaide the 55% chance. Well, and I'm giving them the chance.
You heard it first from Champy, and what can I do but agree?
So that means 1-2-9, doesn't
no,
it?
No, it means 1-9.
Oh, okay.
In the first quarter, so both either team to be leading by up to 12 points at quarter time. Right. And I'm going to repeat that in the up to half time. I reckon it'll still be tight.
Reflux.
1-9. Now I'm expecting Adelaide maybe to get the upper hand, but not by much. So 1-2-9.
Oh, there they are.
And then repeat that in the last quarter. So I'm expecting that Adelaide could win by up to 4 goals, but then again, I'm going each way. Maybe Collingwood could get over the line by a few points.
You have absolutely no idea, do you?
Well, no. I'd say I'm saying it's going to be close. It's going to be close. Adelaide to win, but I am hedging my bet somewhat.
And also problems with the times. It's in Adelaide. There's time zone problems. Is it a 2 o'clock start?
It's a 2 o'clock start in Adelaide, but it's 2:30 over here. So if
you sure about that?
Yeah. Well, actually, 2:30 here, 3 o'clock start now.
I think it's 2:10 and 2:40.
There were problems.
I'm going to say.
When does the window close?
2:30.
2:30 in Adelaide?
No, here.
2:30 Eastern.
Yeah.
2:30 Who's on first?
There could be a lot of angry people who roll up and find it closed at 2 o'clock.
Take it as given. Be on before 2:30 this afternoon in the eastern states, and therefore it'll be 3 o'clock in Adelaide.
Gun your torch.
Sick of the city? Then come with the coulda beans to the heartland. Let's head bush. We're going up country.
Thank you very much, Unc. And it's the Bellarine Football League Grand Final today, being played at Torquay. And Torquay are playing Geelong Amateurs in both the seniors and the reserves.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
We're being joined by the assistant coach of Torquay and the coach of the Amateurs. But, Cove, you've got local knowledge down there. How come Torquay are getting to play a GF on their home ground?
Well, the finals are normally played at Drysdale, but I understand the Drysdale rooms are having renovations, and also Torquay's been the designated ground for the final, and it just so happens that Torquay is in it.
Wow. And there you go. And joining us now is coach of Geelong Amateurs, Travis Robertson. Welcome to the Coulda Beans, Travis.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
And your opposite number, well, one of your opposite numbers down there at the Torquay Tigers, assistant coach Tim Carson. Morning, Tim.
G'day, boys. How you going?
Good, Tim. Can we go to you first, Travis, because it's been a very controversial build-up to today's game because your captain, Tim Clark, was suspended after a video investigation during the week, and you went to appeal last night, and he's the suspension was overthrown.
Yeah, that's correct. It has been a week, and obviously, and it's sometimes distracting week. But fortunately for us, last night the justice prevailed, and Tim will play today.
Right. So, what was it? A late night last night at the hearing?
I got a phone call at about 9:10. So the start at 7, so it went for 2 and a bit hours.
Right, and did Tim continue training during the week?
Yeah, we went through the week I suppose making sure that we thought Tim would play, hopeful that Tim would play, so we named a side with Tim in it, and luckily for us, it went our way.
Right. And now, you side you played in a final a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, we played in the second semi-final 2 weeks ago at the Port Arlington Football Ground. They beat us by 9 points.
So, Tim, you got the upper hand going into the grand final, do you think?
Oh, not necessarily. It's a totally different ball game today. So they've been a very good side all day, all year, I should say. And, you know, hopefully we can repeat what we did there a couple of weeks ago.
What does the home ground advantage mean to you? Much?
No, not really, I suppose. I suppose maybe for the crowd aspect, we'll probably have a lot more people down here that if we were going to have it at somewhere else. But look, it's, you know, I think it's a neutral sort of ground, really. They'll be out to play to win as well. So I don't think it'll have that much bearing.
Well, Tim, it's a beautiful looking day. I know things have changed now and football's taken much more seriously by the players. But in the old days, you'd always be hoping that maybe there'd be a bit of a swell and some of the Torquay players wouldn't turn up.
that's got a bit more professional now. That doesn't happen. It might still happen at the primary schools. If the teachers, if there's a bit of surf, they might call in sick for the day, but not footy.
Hey, Travis, did you lose any games during the year?
Yeah, we lost one home and away game, so we went 17-1.
Right, and then, of course, last week, in the having been beaten by Torquay in the second semi, last week against Ocean Grove in the prelim, you must have been a bit worried, because I saw the scores in the paper on Monday and I thought they must have had them back to front, because at halftime, Ocean Grove 9-something led the Ammos 1, and then they basically didn't score again after halftime, and you've won by about 50 points or something.
Yeah, it was certainly a game of two halves, and at halftime, my 2009 contract might not have been looking so good, tearing down straight sets. But luckily enough, we changed a couple of things around, and the boys after half time were outstanding and got us into a grand final.
Well, was anything particular said at half time?
No, not really. I think it was a good time to have a break, 5 or 10 minutes, just to really have it, talk to each other and flush out a few things that we hadn't done well in the first half, and we improved on those areas and then got our game going.
Mm. It was amazing for top side to only have 1 at half time. Was that played down at your home ground last week at the Ammo?
Yeah, we were lucky enough to have a preliminary final at our home ground too.
So. Oh, would have been marvellous. Would have been some people down there in cashmere sweaters walking their dogs through Queen's Park last Saturday, wouldn't they?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Now, Tim, Travis, I suppose it's not a particularly welcome prospect from all the rest of the clubs in the comp, but it's pretty extraordinary to see the two clubs making the grand final in both the seniors and the reserves. It's got to make it easier for both sides, doesn't it, in terms of selecting the side, to be able to put two teams in the field. Tim?
Yeah, look, it certainly does, and I heard Tim talk this morning about one of their players who potentially had missed out in the game, and I suppose the good thing about that is when they do miss the game out in the seniors, they get to play in a reserves grand final as part of some sort of consolation. Mm. So that makes selection a little bit easier, and preparation obviously easier too when you've got a lot of numbers out on the ground of training.
That's right. Tim, I assume the vibe at training with both sides coming into a grand final must be fantastic.
It is, and and even just for the aspect of being able to have, instead of having 25 blokes of training, you've got 50. It makes drills a lot more enjoyable, and it is. And as Trav said, someone is going to miss out, and the hardest thing probably was watching the blokes. It's all right to drop the blokes from the seniors down into the reserves, but the blokes who miss out in the reserves, they don't get to play at all. So, and I come here today watching the game now, and they're doing the water, and it's they've still got a bit of a tear in their eye because they've missed out. So it is hard for them blokes, but that's football, and we're just lucky enough that we've got full lists that, we're not, wondering where we're going to get our players from.
Is that the reserves game in progress at the moment, or the under-18s?
No, it's the reserves.
Righto. And who won the under-18s? Were you early enough to see that?
Ocean Grove won, yeah. I don't know by how much, but they won, yeah.
Again, who were they playing?
They played Queenscliff. I think Queenscliff hadn't been in an under-18 final since 1982 or something. So,
fantastic.
But Ocean Grove, I think, went through the year undefeated in the kids.
And under-15s?
Under-18s.
And what about the under-15s?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know whether I didn't know that was being played today.
No, there's no under-15s, guys.
Right. Well, what's the score in the seconds at the moment?
I don't know. I'll have to have a look at the scoreboard for you.
Thanks for that.
Torquay 3 and Amateurs 1 point, so 3 points to 1 point. Yeah.
Now, Travis, there's a mystery for me, and I suppose it is for other people who don't know the competition very well. Why aren't the Geelong Amateurs playing in the Amateurs instead of playing in the local league?
I think they have played in that competition in the past, but the amateur comp really is just as far as I'm concerned, a Metro Melbourne competition. Mm. So getting people to be part of the football clubs socially, and also being able to commit time to travel up to Melbourne just in the past, wore the club down, and that's why they became local.
Yeah, it was a tough thing for them to leave the VAFA, and they initially came and played in the Geelong District Footy League, but then went to the Ballerine League. But there's a lot of people that are involved with the Ammos, I'm sure, in the days when they were in the VAFA, who will be down there today barracking for the old Ammos. And, of course, Billy Baxter, to my right here, is a former Geelong Amateur under-18 premiership player.
That's right, Travis. If it's any consolation, and this might be an omen, the last game of amateur football I played was in under-18 grand final, and we had to play it on North Shore's home ground against North Shore, and we towed them up, so that might augur well today for the Ammos, and I've got a Caramello Bear riding on the result. So good luck with it.
Are both of you playing? Or Travis, do you play?
Yeah, I'm a playing coach.
Righto. And Tim?
Yeah, I'm definitely playing, yep.
All right. Will you cross paths at some stage?
Oh, yeah, I'd say he's in the back line, I'm in the forward line, so we'll no doubt see each other at some stage.
Oh, well.
Exchange pleasantries?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we'll just get the job done.
Well, no doubt there'll be a big crowd down there today, and, look, best of luck to both clubs and all the events of the week out the way, and they can concentrate on the footy today.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for joining us. Travis Robertson, coach of Geelong Amateurs, Tim Carson, assistant coach, and both players in their respective clubs in the Bellarine Footy League Grand Final today. Both clubs having their first and seconds.
And I must say, with Geelong Amateurs, of course, having had a history in the VAFA, and they have links, of course, to the college and the grammar, there's a few blokes actually got a real test today, whether to go down to Torquay to watch Geelong Amateurs or go out to Central Reserve in Glen Waverley, where Old Geelong are playing, which is the Ogs, in the D section grand final against Bulleen Templestowe at 2 o'clock, and their reserves are playing North Old Boys at 11:30. That game's on already. So the Ogs, who wear Geelong jumpers, also have affiliations with Geelong Amateur Hall. So there are people that have played for both clubs. Don't know where to go today.
Do you know what the Bulleen club song is?
No.
Bulleen, 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 Bulleen. Just making that up.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you fit Templestowe into that?
Well, that's why the amateur jumpers are light blue and green, because you've got the light blue of Geelong College and the green of Geelong Grammar.
No, other way around.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Billy, that under 18 flag, how'd you play that day?
I did very well for myself.
Did you? PAG?
No, not PAG.
How did you feel as an old Belmont High boy pulling on the light blue of grammar and the green of the college?
I felt very good about it. Because we still got, as a Belmont High School footballer, you still got to go out to the grammar and go through with the elbows up.
You could have been champions on ABC local radio. It's time for Kobe's quiz. 1-300-222-774 is the number. Ring now.
Lindy Burns. What should the New Zealand AFL side be called? We really want to come up with something better than the Falcons.
Lindy Burns.
Hello, Michael.
The Black Behind. Most of the New Zealand teams have black in their name, so like the Tall Blacks and the Black Caps.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Black Butts might be the way to go.
Black Butts. The Tar Boys. The Udders. The Rule Blacks. The one I love. The Hobbits.
Yeah, that's got to be the winner.
That's good, isn't it? I love
it. On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Dig deep into your wallet of wisdom and bag a bargain as Covey conducts a little quiz biz.
Thanks, Unc, and it's time for Covey's quiz. First round of finals pressure in Covey's quiz. We've got a full board of calls here. You can join the queue. 1-300-222-774. Covey, ready to receive your first contestant?
I was tossing up about whether to go and see the Ogs or go down to the Ammos today, and I've ended up going to a 17-year-old's birthday party with 30 screaming 17-year-olds.
Jane is in Hamilton.
Jane. Hello, Jane.
Oh, Covey, you should have chosen the Mighty Ogs.
Oh, well, I've got family duties right in the middle of it all, but you've got affiliations with the Ogs because your brother once captain-coached them.
He certainly did, to a grand final. The last time they were in it.
Yes, very good. Your brother Johnny Manton, of course.
That's the one.
Jane?
Yes, Covey.
How many goals did Buddy kick last night?
8.
Yeah, I've been running out of time with the quiz in recent weeks, so I thought I might make it a bit easier. The next one was going to be, what number does he wear? But we all got a good look at that as well.
Yeah, we certainly did. 23.
No, that's not the question.
Bonus
How many handballs did Daniel Cross have last night?
Lots.
Yeah, good answer, but I need to be a bit more specific.
16.
No, higher than that.
Oh,
I think you've only got his
go
first.
Go Ogs. Hot time in the old time tonight.
Yeah, go Ogs, exactly.
Now, we've got Chris now in East Bentley. I wonder if he's an Ogs supporter. Hello, Chris.
How you going?
Good, Chris.
That's the way.
Who do you barrack for?
Bombers.
No, Bombers, all right. So you're just looking on academically. You'll just get to see a good...
Absolutely.
A good game of football. How many handballs did Daniel Cross have last night?
29.
29. Ooh. Isn't that extraordinary? He must have handballed a few to himself.
Well,
by the same token, how many handballs did Luke Hodge have last night?
Oh, you've got me... I'll have a guess. One.
Correct.
Oh, good get.
Good get. Chris, that is a brilliant guess. That is on the boundary line, on the non-preferred foot, and you've drilled it.
He's had one handle.
He kicks the ball a lot, that bloke.
He had 16 kicks. He has a beautiful kick of the football. Mm. He didn't waste a kick, I don't think, last night.
And he took a few marks as well.
I need to check with Kenny Cassellis to find out whether that handball from Luke Hodge was effective or ineffective. You wouldn't want to have just the one and have an ineffective handball.
It wouldn't have gone on Kenny's stat sheet.
No, it wouldn't have. Now, look, of the current players, who's played the most games of AFL footy?
Probably Robert Harvey.
It is Robert Harvey, yeah, and he goes around tomorrow. What a marvellous thing, too.
See, Chris isn't just guessing. He's being thoughtful. Yeah. It's working for
and
him.
And then he's guessing.
I was looking like 380 or something for Harvey, and I think Brady Johnson's up to 322. They are absolute ornaments, aren't they?
Legends.
Hope he's not too much of an ornament tomorrow afternoon, though, Robert. Now, there's a big final on today, or tonight, between the Swans and North Melbourne. When they played in round six, in a match now known as the controversial 19 men on the ground gate, in player gate, what was the result?
It was a draw.
Yes, it was a draw.
Chris twists, turns, goes bang.
Uh-huh. Not that easy, though.
Coughs it up.
Coughs it up, exactly. When they had 19 players on the ground, I'll tell you this much, it was the Swans had 19 on the ground. Who was the 19th player? I'll give you multiple choice. Was it Heath Grundy, Jesse White, or Craig Bird?
Well, I'll go for the third one, Craig Bird.
It is not Craig Bird.
Oh, yeah. Bad luck, Chris.
He's had an outstanding year.
He's played 21 out of the 22 matches, and I thought he might have been a chance to get nominated at least for the Rising Star.
Did he play at all last year?
No, this is his first season.
And he didn't get nominated?
No.
Well, that's a disgrace.
Chris, you had an outstanding run in the quiz, and you haven't been nominated for Rising Star.
Bad luck, Chris.
Thanks for playing, Chris. Brian joins us now from Melton.
Hello, Brian.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, Brian. You're out at Melton. Are you do you train trotters?
No, but I wouldn't mind getting a job at that new complex.
It's huge, isn't it?
Magnificent.
It is a magnificent. That's going to be the harness racing centre of excellence.
Yes.
Think Melton, think harness racing. Now.
From Geelong Cove.
Are you a Geelong man?
I was born in Geelong.
Whereabouts?
Baxter House.
Thank you. That's the answer we're looking for. Baxter House, named after Billy Baxter. It was just called the maternity ward, and then Billy was born there, and they said, we're going to call it Baxter House from now on.
That's it.
Good on you. No doubt you're barrack for the Cats.
Oh, no doubt.
Right. Who was the 19th player on the ground in that Swans game in round six? Was it Jesse White or Heath Grundy?
I'll go for Jesse White.
It was Jesse White.
Correct, Brian.
And ironically, because people like to say this, ironically, I don't know, in the match tonight, Sydney was forced to make one change to his name, 25, with emergency Heath Grundy replaced by Jesse White. So he's back to reprise his role as the 19th player on the ground.
He's an emergency, though, still, so he might not get out there.
If he gets on, it'll mean they've got 25 on.
That's right.
Two to come. Here you go. Cecilia McIntosh was in on the program earlier. She won the Helen Lambert Medal for the best player in the Victorian Women's Football League last night. She represented Australia in the Commonwealth Games in 2002. In what field event did she represent Australia?
Oh, dear. I heard the tail end of that interview and I bloody missed it.
I wouldn't have used the word missed.
Field event.
Any clues?
Have a guess.
Have a stab.
I'll go javelin.
Correct. Good stab. And she won a medal. What colour was the medal? I'll give you multiple choice: gold, silver, or bronze.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, I'll go bronze.
Bad luck, Brian. This opens the door for Steve up in Echuca.
G'day, Steve.
Morning, boys. How are you?
Good.
Steve, did you hear Cecilia McIntosh before?
Once again, I only caught the back half of that as well.
Well, look, she won a medal at the in the javelin at the 2002 Manchester Commonwealth Games. Was it gold or silver?
I'll have a stab at silver.
Silver's correct.
Yeah. Correct, Steve.
Well done to you. Who do you barrack for?
I'm a Bombers man as well.
All right. You got local footy on up there today?
We do. It's actually Heathcote League Grand Final today, which I'm affiliated with one of the clubs there.
Which one?
Lockington, Vermore.
Good luck to him.
Good afternoon to Torch McGee.
Yes, good afternoon, Richo, and to everyone out there.
To Greg Champion.
Yes, hello, around Australia.
To Ian Cover.
Yes, good afternoon, Richo, and as you say, Champion around Australia.
Yeah, and especially in Adelaide.
Yes, mm-hmm. And especially on King Island. We didn't get a chance to mention the first hour. We know that they point the aerial in our direction.
And good afternoon,
midday.
Billy Baxter.
It is good Billy. Afternoon.
Now, we spoke to them down there last week. The big grand finals on between Grassy and North.
And spoke to Yarn.
The tip we got was North should be just too strong, but you never know, but you probably do know.
North, 17-29. 131 beat Grassy, 7-7-49. That score of 7-7-49 was actually Grassy's score at halftime, three-quarter time and final time. So, as expected, North ran over the top. So thank the Yarn who just sent us in the match report and the results down there.
They look like they could use a kicking coach down there at North too.
Yeah.
29.
Look.
It's a lot of behinds.
Yeah, they're just a bit more on the International Cup.
Yes.
Yeah.
In yesterday's, what do you call those rounds where you decide the minor placings?
Repechage.
The relegation round.
Whatever, good torch. Mm. In the relegation round, China were playing India, and they broke through for their first win of the comp. Close game, but they led all day. And at the end of the game, the Chinese team hoisted their coach, Daryl Hoffman, into the air in a what display of emotion?
Jubilant.
Effusive.
Boisterous.
Raw.
Raw?
Raw.
No, yeah, raw. Emotion's always raw.
And we found out who won. PNG won from New Zealand. Mm. Well, who came third and fourth, Jeff, if I may ask?
Oh, that was a huge turn-up. Mm-hmm. Ireland, who were fancied to win the whole thing, were relegated to fourth. They lost to South Africa by 1 point.
Oh.
So will there be trouble down there in Ireland?
I think there will be.
Island footy, where to now?
Well, they came all the way down under as favourites. They go home fourth out of the medals.
That's right. I think they got ahead of themselves.
All is not well down there.
Was there any Irish players seen getting any Australian barmen in headlocks last night?
That's where they went wrong.
they'll be all over the Irish papers today, hey? The Dublin Times.
Yeah, well, China got up over India, as you heard, which meant India finished in 16th. So,
did they?
First pick in the draft.
Yeah, but
they got their Olympic medal in the shooting.
They may be a minnow of international Aussie rules, but when they focus on it and turn things around. They'll get an IPL of Aussie rules going.
That's right.
And they'll decimate the international competition. They'll be buying blokes from PNG.
And the other game down the bottom of the table for 13th, to decide 13th and 14th.
Yes.
The peace team, who couldn't buy a goal early in the comp, have just swamped Finland.
Mm.
They beat him by about 12 goals.
Really?
Sure. Yeah, well, I think they got some early advice, did they not, from Ronald Dale Barassi? Yeah. Peace team.
Oh, did they? Oh,
I think he's been helping out down there.
I also think it's common knowledge the Finland team is in a rebuilding phase.
All right. Now, Champy?
They didn't bring their A game either.
Yeah. The future of Chinese football? IOAMOT.
What's that stand for?
It's only a matter of time.
it is. Yeah. Hey, you know that thing where people are always going about them. They've even been doing it this year, having discussions about who's the best player. Is it Buddy Franklin or is it Gary Ablett or Chris Judd? And the exercise is, righto, get all the players in the league, line them up, just like you did in the schoolyard. Billy, you're captain of one. Torch, you're coming. You know, who are you going to pick first? They're playing a bit of backyard footy over in China. Line them up along the wall. They're going to pick picks. You've got a billion to pick from.
That's right. And they'll be lined up along the Great Wall.
A very long wall, yeah.
I'll take Yao Ming.
I think he goes all right.
Why didn't they bring Yao Ming out?
What's the name of the Chinese hurdler? Is that Liu Xian?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's out injured at the moment.
But Achilles.
When he comes back, I'll have him as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
He'd be very quick. He'd be a run with type.
Yes.
He'd go through the lines and the hurdles at the same time. And I think... Parko's had a bit. I heard him talking last night on the pre-match on Grandstand last night, David Parkin, that he'd been had a lot to do with it during the week. Mm-hmm. And in fact said last night that an Irishman ran over the mark giving away a 50-metre penalty.
Oh, it was a Jim Stein.
And cost the Irish team their win.
Yeah.
So
But the South African bloke still had to kick the goal.
Who was the South African equivalent of Gary Bakanara?
I'll find out for you. Mm.
So clearly the Irish player in question has modelled himself on... I'll look up to Jimmy Steens. I mean,
Jimmy went out to training with the Irish and showed them how to do it.
Well, you have to be... I mean, you have to consider that Jimmy Steens is a very unlucky man because... It had to end up in Gary Bakanara's hands. Yeah. If he wanted it in anybody's hands, he'd be the first bloke I'd pick.
Yeah, that's right. If it had been Bernie Jones,
yes.
Things might have been
that's
all right.
That's right,
Gerard Whateley would normally join us at this time. Hopefully he will shortly, because I wanted to raise with Gerard. Champs and I were at a function yesterday where they opened their time capsule. Do you think we should be opening our time capsule as well and marking the role at this
stage? Not a bad idea.
Because the eight has been settled.
That's right, Kay.
The time capsule was opened where we were yesterday.
Yes.
And the winner had actually correctly selected 7 out of 8.
Oh, that's a good get.
We'll ask you, Torch.
Yes. Or Billy, Richo, because Champs and I know the answer. The three of you can put your fingers on the buzzers. Just test them.
Which team did he get wrong?
Billy?
Did he fall for Frio?
Yes!
Correct! and another man who fell for them was Gerard Whateley. Good morning, or good afternoon, Gerard.
Toby, hello.
Does that not surprise you that someone who got 7 out of 8 missed on Frio?
No, it's been a disease, but hopefully we've all banded together to try to cure it.
Well, thank goodness, Gerard, Fremantle weren't represented at the Olympics.
Yes.
Gerard, I'll just quickly mark yours, if you like, because I've opened the time capsule.
Righto.
Geelong?
Yes.
Frio. Hawthorne, St. Kilda, Collingwood, Brisbane Lions, West Coast Eagles, Essendon.
About four?
Four for Gerard.
Three of the top four, though, so I'm claiming some sort of moral victory.
Yes, Geelong, Hawthorn and St Kilda have finished in the top four. You're quite right.
You want your tips weighted.
What's that grade? That's a grade. That's a D, is it, Kobe, for that?
Well, Gary March, would he give that a 5 out of 10? Well, it's 4 out of 8,
yes,
same thing.
Yep.
Right, oh, dear. Well, Gerard.
Yes.
Drew, he only picked four.
He only put four in at the start, didn't he?
He put four. He put Geelong, St Kilda, Brisbane Lions and Collingwood. So he got
3 out of 4.
3 out of 4.
Well, if he'd put Geelong and Hawthorn in as the only two, we would have marked him as just about 100%.
Exactly. So I'll have a look at the others shortly, but while we've got you there, we better talk about last night.
It was tremendously exciting, I thought, what Hawthorn did. And, you know, the final stage has now been set with Lance Franklin kicking 8 goals, and he completely dominated, and it was a joy to behold, and what a threat he's going to be to everyone who comes up against him, because... When he's on like he is last night, he plays the game on a different plane. And how you find a man to stop him, I don't know. So there have been many a final series dominated by one individual, and it doesn't always lead to premierships. But I just have a hunch this is going to be the Lance Franklin final series.
Goodness. Now, the experts in the box with you last night, did they have any suggestions about how to stop him? Or because they barrack for Hawthorn, they don't care?
I think they were just rejoicing in it all. I think if you didn't have the Bulldogs close to your heart, I think we all were. And the interest in the last quarter, first of all, was whether he would kick a 9th to become the highest ever Hawthorn goal scorer in a final, and then whether he would nudge into double figures, which is rare air indeed in September. But he had to settle for, 8-2 and 2 out of bounds. That's a pretty good return for Buddy.
I suppose that the thing that surprised a lot of people watching the game was how much space he was allowed to have, and the fact that the Bulldogs didn't seem to want to get back and block up his space.
Well, I guess, look, Hawthorn played it well. They knew he was too big for Morris, and the Bulldogs chose to go that way, and you choose the man you think is best equipped, and they went with Morris. So Hawthorn tried to isolate Franklin as much as they could, and they did a good job with it. They had control through the midfield, so it allowed them to. So I find it difficult to be overly critical that numbers didn't swarm back. And that's the beauty of the Hawthorn forward line is when you've got Ruphead, who makes Blake accountable, and then they switch and Lake and Morris trade opponents, you can't fall off Ruphead to go and cover Franklin because they'll kick it to Ruphead. And the upshot of it all last night was Osborne kicked 4 Hawthorn goals in a row either side of half-time because no one could find him. They were trying to cover Buddy and Franklin, and the net effect was there was a spare bloke all the time.
Mm. Jared, you're obviously in your car making your way across to Football Park.
Yeah, no, we've had Father's Morning at Kinder.
Oh, so I see.
Just pulled myself away from the hokey pokey to come to the studio to host the free match.
And, of course, Adelaide and Collingwood is the game for description this afternoon. It'll be heard here on Grandstand.
It will, and I think this is really interesting. It seems to me that if Collingwood can hit 13 goals, they'll win, because Adelaide will try to restrict them and strangle them. I think Collingwood will. I'm really buoyant about Collingwood this afternoon. But once the teams came in and Paul Pleasure was out of the Crows side, I think that's such a cruel blow. He's had a stellar year for Adelaide. All his stats say he's the dangerous man up forward. He's played through injury as best he can, and it's crueled him at exactly the wrong moment. So I'm stone cold on Adelaide. I think Collingwood.
Apart from his Sydney game, Paul Pleasure hasn't been that prominent in recent weeks, Jared.
Well, I think he'll be all Australian, and he's been the Crows' best player for the year. And he'll always bob up and kick you a couple of goals. And when you're only going to score, when you're on record saying, you know, you'll score 11 or 12 and try to keep your opponents under it, you've got to get the 11 or 12 first. So I think it's a cruel blow.
Well, Jared, don't be dismissive of Greg Champion's football abilities and knowledge, because I've just marked the role here of the time capsule. Greg got 6 out of 8 in his 8.
Mm, well done,
he
Greg.
He knows his footy.
Yes.
He missed on Port Adelaide and Frio.
So he doesn't know.
As we all had Frio in there. Everyone had Frio. Oh, no, Richo didn't have Frio.
And a few had Port Adelaide too, I'd say.
Yeah, well, you go for the grand finals of the previous year.
Mm. Can I get extra bonus points for that, for being someone who did not fall for Frio?
Well, you've got to need them because you fell for Carlton, Brisbane, Essendon, Richmond and Melbourne.
Well, what's so wrong with Carlton? At the start, look, let's face it, at the start of this year, there was pretty much consensus in the football world that Carlton were going to win the flag. Mm. Chris Judd was going to win the Brownlow.
And the goal-kicking which you had. But no, there was consensus in the Carlton football world. But I'll have to wait till next year. Hey, so Sydney and North tonight and Geelong and St Kilda. Are you calling again for the weekend at all, Jared?
No, I've just got the pre-match today and the Inquisition tomorrow, and I'll be nestled in with the executive producer in the stands tomorrow to see the Cats go around and make our assessments from there.
Mm. Well, as I always say to you, keep your phone on.
Yes, I will.
Thank you, Jared.
Thanks,
I'll
Jared.
I'll be there shortly. See
ABC Grandstand's Jared Whateley, who you'll be hearing shortly on the pre-match. ABC Grandstand bringing you all the action from Footy Park and then again from Olympic Park in Sydney this evening.
Now, I believe there's been a breakthrough up there at Parkville at one of those medical institutes that they now have. A serum which can inoculate you against picking Frio next year.
Just quickly on the remainder of the time capsule, yes, Jared got 4. Champs, you had 6.
Mm.
Billy had 4, missing on Port Adelaide, Carlton, Essendon and Frio. Wasn't looking too good from the top of the rundown after that. You had 1 out of 5, then you came strongly with Hawthorn, St Kilda and Adelaide. You're still very much in the mix too for bonus points for Joel Selwood for the Brownlow.
Mm.
So I did see this week where, and you did have Melbourne for the spoon.
Yep.
The only person to do
I
so.
I had Melbourne for the spoon, I think.
Yes, you did. Sorry, Torch. Yeah. And I did see during the week where 1970 Brownlow medalist Peter Bedford tipped Joel Selwood to win the Brown,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And that's coming from a Brownlow medalist. Richo got 3. Torchy got 5, missing on Port Adelaide, Frio and Brisbane. And I got 6, missing on Frio and Port Adelaide.
Same.
Those two just keep popping up.
What is going on? dear. And there was no Buddy Franklins for the goal kicking. It was Jard, of course, Mooney for Vola. 3 Johnny Browns, or a couple of Johnny Browns, a Kirk Tippett and a. Is it Kirk or Turk? Kurt?
Kurt.
Kurt and Matty Lloyd.
Oh, no, it's Brenty Tippett.
John Brown didn't win it because Bradshaw got all those goals for it.
Well, they got about 80 each.
That's right, yes.
Anyway, that's the time capsule for another year.
And just going back to that bronze medal elimination game yesterday in the International Cup, where on the last kick of the day, South Africa got up to relegate pre-competition favourites Ireland to fourth position. The role of Gary Bakanara after an Irish player ran over the mark and was brought in close to take the shot was Simfewe Mbalo.
Oh, no, nice.
He is the Buccaneer. Don't worry
I've
about
had my eye on
he
him.
He kicked truly.
Mm.
I think we're about to go to Julian's Bunsen Burner bit. And this is deja vu all over again.
Right. Yes.
Because the match he's looking at occurred between two teams who are playing on a Sunday again, as they did.
Mm. Yeah, the only thing missing is that we can't get it staged at Waverley.
What a shame.
So 1991 we're going back to. Julian's just out there in the studio setting the dials on the time machine as we speak.
A pro or a learner, a twister, a turner, you've got to be fast on your feet to escape the heat of Professor Ross and the Bunsen burner. Turn it up, Jules.
Some games gorge on goals. Something special when it's a final. One that stands out like a town hall clock is 1991. Second elimination, Geelong versus St Kilda at Waverley. Saints out of the blocks like Usain Bolt after half a dozen coffees. Booted the first three majors. The Cats settled from halfway through the first. Sean Denham brought up full points. Plugger Lockett, radar off. One goal, four. Class service from midfielders Winmar and Harvey and Burke found the chest of the great spearhead. Then, six-pointers into a fluky win. Buddha Hocking and Mark Bairstow and Trevor Poole secured possessions to locate the leading AEW, Bill Brownless. The Cat full forward, clever goals. Confidence higher than a kite. Quarter time, Geelong led. 5-3 to 3-5. Over the second, a battle of the on-ballers and full forwards. Saint has gained the ascendancy. Gilbert McAdam and Craig Devonport won the ball with ease. Hand passes to Winmar and Harvey, both of whom pumped the ball long. Lockett, too strong. Incredible snags from all angles. Half-time, St Kilda 9-7 to Hoops 6-6. The third half-hour produced a change in mood that the band Kids in the Kitchen would understand. G's first four, two from snaps. Goals flowed like spumante. Seven for the quarter, including four from Brownless. Against the wind, the Seasiders managed four. A pair to Big Tony. The last quarter, Geelong manned up on the dangerous Saints middies. Brownless, scavenger goal. Stoneham kept Lockett to one. Final siren, Cats home, 15-14 to 14-13. Billy, eight. Plugger, nine. The dominance of both key forwards indicated brittle defences. Fans love big guys slamming through twin flaggers.
Oh, thanks, Julian. What a game. Ooh. What an era. 1991 at Waverley. Huge spearheads at either end. Beautiful spring day. A final being played. And we seem to have gathered here on the Coulda Beans this afternoon a lot of people who were involved in the game that day. Ian Covey, you were there?
Yes, it's all coming back to me because it's 17 years ago that I was talking earlier in the program. My daughter was born on the Friday night and I went out to the game on the Sunday, which was well-timed. And I went out with a St Kilda supporter.
Who joins us online now, could have been champion Simon Whelan. Good afternoon, Si.
Oh, good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, those were the days, eh, Covey?
You picked me up at St Vincent's Private.
That's the way.
And off we went.
We were happy then. Where did we go wrong?
And we went out in the Datsun 180B, I think.
I think we did, and we had a word to Sheeds, if you recall.
Yes.
And then we sat next to a really interesting bloke who owns a hotel down in Geelong. I think its name was the Lord of the Isles. Oh,
and I think behind him was a bloke who owned a car yard. So we had them all covered. Well, probably Morphy.
Yeah. I've got to say, I sat with the Pivots that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was interesting listening to Julian's thing there. My recollection is that we were well on top in the first half, but...
9-7 to 6-6 at half-time.
Three-goal lead at half-time.
Yeah, it's... I thought we were even further in front than that, because remember, the third quarter, Cats came back mainly due to the agency of Buddha, as I recall.
Yeah, Buddha had a big second half.
And it was a great day for second-string St Kilda players. Gilbert McAdam, who Julian mentioned, but Dean Rice had a great game that day.
I got him down for 11 kicks and 3 handballs.
Oh, okay, well...
you're probably thinking of Craig Davenport's 26 disposals.
No, I think Dean Rice played in a half-back flank or something.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Played a very good game. And I remember I did say to you, we won't beat you unless Lockett kicks 10.
He kicked 9-5.
That's right.
Well, he would have kicked 10.
Except?
He had 8 at three-quarter time.
Yeah.
And a bloke had played at centre-half back on Stuart Lowe for three-quarters.
Yeah.
Went back to full-back. Do you know who that was?
Was it Stoneham?
Correct.
Yeah.
Barry Stoneham. He joins us in the studio.
So be careful what you say. Nice to be here.
Yes. Barry.
Yes. Don't you miss playing at Waverley?
Actually, I used to love Waverley. It was a great ground, great surface, probably the best ground around apart from Kenilia Park, of course. But I suppose those days it was a long way out. These days it's close to the city. It was a beautiful ground to play on there.
Now, Barry, when three-quarter time huddle, do you remember being told, if we want you to go to Plugger?
I was trying to hide. I'm 6'4", red hair. It's hard to hide anywhere. And when Blighty sort of started looking towards me, and Plugger was on fire, got 8 goals at three-quarter time, and he sort of looked over to me and I thought, I know what he's going to say. I wasn't overly keen because Big Plug was on the rampage then. And I had Stewie Lowe, which we always played on Stewie Lowe over the years. Centre-half forward, centre-half back. And, we had a good battle for the three quarters. And then all of a sudden down to Big Plug as he was standing in the goal square at the start of the last quarter. It was quite intimidating.
Who had been playing on Plug at all that stage?
I think it was Trevor Spencer.
Trevor Spencer.
Doing a reasonable job, but, you know, Plug was hard to stop. At 8 goals, he was on fire. And Billy, of course, was... the other end getting 8 goals. It was a great game and a day like today. Beautiful weather.
What did you say to Plugger when you were...
I didn't say a lot. No, I just tried to smile. And, how are you? Nice to see you.
But it's got to be one of the biggest asks in football. It's three-quarter time in an elimination final. There's 1 point the difference. Mm. Plugger's on the rampage. Can you go down and stand next to him, please?
Yeah, it was a big task. And look, I think I've known Plugger from the state games in 89 and 90, so... although he wasn't nice to me, at least he respected me a bit more. And he probably had times where he could have just run through me and followed me and whatever he might have done. But he probably didn't do it as hard as he could have, maybe.
Can you recall the goal he did kick in the last quarter?
I can't actually. No, isn't that bad?
Surely it was a touchy-touchy-ticky-touch.
It was a dodgy free kick, yeah. He pushed me out. These days would have been through to me. He pushed me out.
Simon?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Barry. I thought there were a few to Plugger in that last quarter went unpaid.
To me.
Were you worried, Simon, as a St Kilda fan, when you saw Barry going on to Plugger in the last quarter? I can't recall.
You know, it was a game psychologically very similar to tomorrow in that St Kilda supporters went along with very low expectations. And we're pretty pleased that we were able to match it with Geelong because I think we might have just snuck into fifth and you were third or something like that.
No, I think the Saints went straight out and really should have had a double chance.
We went
they?
Straight out. I remember talking to Russell Morris afterwards, and they were just devastated because they felt they just hit their best form in that game, and they'd come up against Geelong, who were flying at that point. So, remember another great one you were at, and you too, Billy, I think. Was it 67 or 68 when St Kilda played Geelong and Bill Ryan took that mark? Is my recollection right on that?
First semi, 68.
Yep. And I think we thrashed you at Moorabbin the week before.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, Simon, your memory is a little bit faulty because Geelong finished third and St Kilda finished fourth on the ladder.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think the two form teams going in, and it's a real pity that one was eliminated because I remember those years ago, Geelong and St Kilda in 91, were probably the two real form teams and one had to go out, unfortunately.
It was a shocker with the 5 and the 6, wasn't it? That happened a lot.
Absolutely.
And of course, you wanted the Saints to still keep going because a bit like Buddy last night, if you have Plugger still playing, it's exciting for the fans. You know?
Oh, yeah. They were an exciting team, St Kilda, with Winmar and all these guys, and Stewie Lowe and Plugger and Harves and all these gentlemen. So they were a really exciting team. And of course, our attacking nature back in those days was you kick more than kick 25, they get 24, you win the game. Mm. And Billy was on fire. So it was a really good final series, but just, again, couldn't quite take it off.
Who had the job that day on Billy? Did Danny Frawley play on Billy all day?
I don't think so. Not all day, I don't believe. I'm trying to think who it was, because Billy was certainly a full forward, also centre-half forward at times.
Mm.
So Spud would have been on him for a while. But I'm not quite sure who the other person would have been.
Ricky Nixon, would he have gone down the back line?
Not a centre-half back or full-back.
Ricky Nixon was playing.
Yeah.
hey, Si?
Yeah?
Just a couple of names from that side that day. Just give us your assessment as a St Kilda fan, because some of your favourites. Frankie Coughlin?
Yeah, he did all right, I think.
He had 16 disposals, had 7 and 9. Danny?
Something I'm sure happened at some stage, Simon. You would have turned to Ian and said, Would somebody please tell Frank Coughlin to have a look before he kicks
it? Oh, I'm sure we said that. How did Gilbert McAdam go? My recollection was he had a good game.
Yeah, 16 and 6 for 22 possessions and kicked a couple of goals.
And Winmar, of course, but we just expect that.
Yeah, 27 possessions and a couple of goals. Two behind him. You also had Danny Craven.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Harding was in the ruck. Dean Gregg, who we spoke to here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Who was playing. He was a tough player in the middle. You had Stephen Newport.
Gee, household names.
Don't forget Lazard.
Big Lazard video, Vic.
Oh, yeah.
And the man who pulled the knife on Peter Dacos, Kane Taylor.
And of course, Geelong story, you went on to be beaten by both Hawthorn. And 2 points, I think, that game was.
Thanks for reminding, yeah.
Yes, and then you went out against West Coast Eagles.
Yeah, we played Hawthorn at Waverley again, I believe, and I think it was when Trevor Poole was running. It was the last minute or so of the game. Yeah. He had the whole ground ahead of him. Took a bounce, took another bounce down the wing, half forward flank. Could have run into 25 metres out, but had a shot from 55 out, and it fell short. Kicked the point.
And it bounced through, I think. Yeah.
So we played Eagles the following week, and it was a really wet day again, and Blighty put myself in the ruck at the start of the game, and Berkey at centre-half forward. Unusual.
That was just the crazy world of Arthur Blight.
Yeah. And it led I remember everyone feeling the letdown because you knew that the Eagles couldn't beat Hawthorn.
Then the next week. Because all the finals were at Waverley. And it just showed the contrast in the weather, didn't it? The Geelong St Kilda day was magnificent.
Yeah.
And a fortnight later, it was a Waverley classic.
5 degrees and pouring, right?
And then the league had the Batmobile installed just to finish it off for us.
We had Greg and I went to that grand final. Remember that, Greggy?
Oh, that was the... we sat next to the fellow who had his feminine side going.
We sat next to Neil Cordy.
Yeah, all right.
And Greg made the immortal observation that he nicely developed his feminine side.
Just what Neil wanted to hear.
And good afternoon, Neil, and he's a good chap.
Yeah. Gee, Barry, the time goes quickly, doesn't it? That's 1991. You're listed here as being 23 years old then.
Thanks for the reminder again.
And 211 days.
It is amazing. It feels like probably 30 years ago. It's like 17 years, a long time.
Mm.
And 91, like 23 years, it has flown, that's for sure. Mm. And even I retired in 2000, so 8 years out, to me it's another lifetime ago when I was playing football. Mm-hmm. Sort of go to footy now and watch them play, you just think, how could I ever play that game before? I can't understand.
If you were still playing at Geelong, do you think Mark Thompson would come to you and say, Barry, can you go on to Buddy Franklin?
Well, I suppose back when I was playing, that was a bit of my advantage. I could play in different areas at times, whether it be centre back or full back. And I had a beer with Malcolm this year up at Palm Cove. I had quite a few beers with Malcolm, and he said he wished he had made me a full back every year. He wanted to make me a full back player. I said, I'm glad you didn't, because I hated full back. Probably the worst spot to play on the ground.
Yeah.
And he thought it would have been my best spot. And I said, well, thank you very much, because I didn't want to play there.
Mm.
I'd play there probably 3 or 4 times a year at best. And it was a really, really tough position to play. And if you look at the Buddy Franklins of the world now.
But he doesn't play full forward, though.
No, he plays everywhere.
Yeah. Yes.
He's just an amazing player. Watched him last night and all through the year. I'd reckon he'd be another 10 years' time, could be the best ever.
Well, he's never beaten, is he? No matter what the defender does, they get their fist on it and goes to the ground. He might lose his feet, but then suddenly he's got it again.
Yeah.
his speed and his strength, but if he can get him to kick straight, he'd be something else.
Amazing. I remember watching him at the Collingwood game here this year, MCG, and I really wanted to watch him, how he played. And his endurance, the way he ran and worked during the game was amazing. Apparently, at training, he's like the second best runner over 400 metres with Shane Crawford, 6'6".
Mm.
So his engine is so big. And watching that game closer than usual, he just ran up and back and sideways all day till the last minute of the game.
And that's footy in 2008, you're saying?
Mm.
You
know,
2000, when you retired, seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, the game has changed so many times since then.
The quality of all the players is just so high, isn't it?
And so fit. I mean, you've got to be, and as we're saying, most of them are 6 foot plus and run like athletes and Olympians, and they're so strong and also quick, and it's just got every attribute that they need as a player.
But those pre-seasons that they do now, would you have done anything like that?
I think ours was a lot harder pre-season wise. We actually trained like just ran and ran and ran until it got dark,
and carried telegraph poles and
all that sort of thing. Yeah, and really did a lot of that, like 3 hours at the night. There's Malcolm's philosophy was just train until the sun went down, and daylight saving time. Pre-season was 8:30 at a Deakin University, going wish the sun would go down.
Like carrying a railway sleeper.
Yeah, you just do tackling. You run like 1K time trials, 5 of them, then you go to ball practice and match practice. And so I think that those days you train a lot harder. These days they train smarter, more cross-training.
Plugger wouldn't have been doing much of that, though, would he?
No. We had a couple of those guys as well. They didn't do a lot of that sort of stuff.
And Gaddy?
Probably the better ones, like Gazza in particular.
I was going to say, Greg, did you have something to say?
I was going to say, what is the difference between pre-season training then and now? But you've articulated it. Smarter and cross-training.
They certainly train longer, like probably from get there at 8 in the morning and finish at 4, but a lot more, I suppose, not running countless miles and k's like we used to do, not tackling. Mm. It's more or less, it's a bit more specific towards what they're doing, and even massages and Pilates and all the sort of smarter way of doing it.
You wouldn't have got an all-expenses-paid trip to Arizona either, would you?
No, end of the year we did. But
tomorrow, where will you be?
Working for the MCC tomorrow. I do a bit of stuff during the year for them in there, some of the corporate suites, so which is a nice way to do it.
Nice way to go and watch the Cats play.
Looking forward to it. Can't wait. I've really enjoyed watching the Cats the last few years, just as a footy team. To go and watch the standard they play football is just fantastic.
And this is the first time we've had you on since the grand final day last
year. That's right, yeah.
And you might just share with the listeners what it was like on the Sunday night in Geelong with all those blokes. A lot of these fellows that played in that side in 91.
Yeah.
Are still mates and all gathered, didn't they, and really enjoyed the fact that the Cats had won.
Oh, yeah, look, I suppose before the grand final and even after, a lot of people ask me, would I be bitter or angry and all that sort of thing and jealous? I said, there's no way, no. I was born a Geelong supporter, and I played at Geelong, and when I retired, I'm a Geelong supporter again. So the best time I've ever had, really, apart from my wedding day, of course, the Sunday was probably the second best day I've had down at Geelong. We drove down about midday, got to the footy club, didn't go to the present players' rooms, went to all the old boys went in the other rooms. And one by one, everyone just turned up. There's no phone calls, mate. People just sort of lobbed in. Went across to the big fella's pub, Lord of the Isles, and the same thing.
And they're still there.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, there was like Barnsley turned up, Brad Scholl, Paul Brown from Shepparton. And every 5 or 10 minutes, someone would get up on the table or stool or the chairs and sing the song. And the whole place to
anyone erupted. Who could even ask you that question, are you feeling bitter or disappointed? They just don't understand footy.
No, it was quite commonly though last year. It really was. Beforehand, it sort of people did say, how would you feel when they win? I said, well, what do you expect?
Yeah.
I won't be upset. I'll be emotional.
What kind of question?
But
is
a good
that?
Way. I love the club.
Yeah, fantastic.
Barry Stoner, thanks for joining us. And it was a great day that day out at Waverley.
And Simon, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I've got to go in a minute. I've got an auction I've got to...
followed by tennis and a passion fruit sponge, no doubt.
Well, Barry's working the corporate suites tomorrow. What will you be doing?
Well, I'll be going to the game. I'll be there.
Mm-hmm. You'll get there early and spread the age out on a few seats?
No. I've got a seat.
Of course. Well, we might see you there. Keep your phone on, so I'll give you a call.
Yep.
We can reminisce.
I'll be in that little area on the first level there, Covey.
Righto. Mm.
Now, you mentioned before, Simon, about low expectations. What are your expectations tomorrow?
Well, I don't really mind whether we win or we don't. As long as we're competitive. I reckon they beat us 8 times out of 10, but you just don't know, do you?
No,
you
do not know. It's
funny game football.
Yeah, it is. So I will see you
at the
footy.
I think you do
know.
All right. See you at the game.
Go, Simon.
And Barry, enjoy your day tomorrow. Thanks
Looking
for joining us.
Thanks very much.
From Footscray to Frio, not even Sol Trujillo has to pay a fee. Oh, fling your finger at the phone and talk to Torch.
And plenty have. First caller. Go ahead, please. You're talking to Torch.
Hello.
Yes, hello, Torch.
Who's calling, please?
It's Barry here, Torch.
Barry, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the beautiful Barossa Valley.
Oh, wonderful. And do you support a football team, Barry?
Yes, we follow the Ravens. And I see that they're playing today against the Black Crows.
Well, they're playing the Magpies over there in Adelaide.
Oh, how common. Well, we're very concerned.
Why is that?
Oh, young Jason is out with an injury.
Oh, yes, he is. Jason Poplesia.
Oh, is that his name?
Yes.
I just know him as young Jason.
Right.
And Kim was saying that he felt that he'd heard some news that he may have injured his shoulder.
Yes, that's correct. He has got a shoulder injury.
Did he take a fall during a pas de deux?
Well, I'm not quite sure about that, Barry. We've
got some advice. If they want to get him back in the side...
Yes.
Send him up to the Barossa Valley Farmer's Market.
Yes.
And we'll get some aromatherapy for his shoulder.
Okay, then, Barry. Not a bad idea. Yeah.
Well, pass that on. We know they monitor the show very closely over there at Football Park. Yes. Neil Craig doesn't miss a trick. Very professional coach. He's open to ideas. Next caller, though. You're talking to Torch now. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Please, may I talk to Mr. Nengay, please?
Yeah, yes, you're talking to him. Who's calling, please?
Yes,
who's calling, please?
That's right.
Who's calling? Could you identify yourself,
Lance,
please?
Lance in Lara.
Lance from Lara, yes.
Yeah. You've been... Barry Steinman still there? Please?
No, he had to dash off, unfortunately, Lance.
Could I talk to him then, please?
No, you won't be able to talk to him today. He's gone, Lance.
When is he coming back? I've got a very important question for him.
Well, I'm sure if you could air
could
your...
Could you ask him a question
yes,
for
we
him,
could,
please?
Yes, for sure.
What's David Mensch really like?
You'll ask that question.
Well, I think
Barry.
We'll be seeing him at the football tomorrow, so
you
can
ask
that.
Him that. Yes. Next caller, you're talking to Torch.
Hello.
Oh, g'day, Torch.
Oh, who's this?
It's Danny here.
Danny from Droop Street?
Yeah, I'm Droop Street, mate.
And you're a Bulldog supporter, I believe, Danny?
I am, mate, and I told you so.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a very good night last night, Danny.
Well, it's just what we expected, as I said.
Yes, but you got the double chance, Danny. You can fight back.
Oh, mate, I wish it was an elimination final. End this pain.
Oh, no.
Next caller on Could Have Been Champions Footy Talkback. You're talking to Torch. Hello. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hey, old pal, kid.
Who's calling, please?
Pat here.
Pat from?
Calling from Port.
Port Adelaide?
Hi.
Yeah.
No, Port Melbourne. I've only spoke to you about a dozen times, mate. Okay.
Well,
I only wanted to say I'm very disappointed.
Yes, why is that?
I'm not going to grumble.
Right.
Not going to whinge.
Yes.
Very disappointed. Port finished so far down list.
Yes.
I'm looking at figures.
Right.
Looking at fact.
Right.
Looking at t'other. Points to one thing. It started going bad, and fish rots from the head up. Started going bad when Chapman was paid that mark when he was in back of our Warren. That turned tight, our lad.
Okay, then. All right, Pat. Well, there's always...
You've got to take decisions on the chin, I know, and mustn't grumble.
Yes.
Mustn't put up a fuss.
Yes.
But by gummy, we're in back.
Okay, Pat. Well, that's a turning point. Yes.
Next caller now on this finals edition of Could Have Been's Footy Talk Back. You're talking to Torch.
Hello.
Hello, Georgie.
Who's calling, please?
Donnie here, mate.
Donnie, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from down home, mate, Devonport.
You're back in Devonport, yep.
Yeah, mate, big night last night.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, we were watching Hawthorn and the Dogs.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and where were you watching it?
Down the Tiger's Arms, mate.
Right, and then...
Nobby had a very good question. He said, ring up that Torchy and ask him, because he knows all about footy.
Okay, well, fire away.
What were they doing playing it last night at the MCG?
Say that again?
What were they doing playing that game last night at the MCG?
Well, because it was a final, and we play all our finals either at the MCG or at the Docklands.
Hang on. Hawthorn finished above the Dogs on the ladder.
That's right.
Yeah, well, Nobby reckons that, therefore, they should get a home final.
Right.
Why wasn't it played down at York Park?
That is a very good point.
And we could all go wrong.
You could have, that's true.
Last night.
Yes, you could have, but I don't
got
think...
no lights, but gee, we could have had a good time.
that's a very, very good point.
If you look at what happened last time they played down there, I think the Dogs might have won.
Yeah. That is what we call down here.
What's that?
An SFQ.
Which means?
A serious football question.
Okay. Well, Coach will get you an answer for that. Stay tuned. We'll squeeze in one more caller now.
Okay.
No more calls? No time. Sorry to those callers waiting. Perhaps you'll get through next week. We've got across to the temple. Guru is waiting to talk to you. I can hear him.
Guru Bob.
Hello there.
Yes.
Hello.
Come in loud. You're coming in loud and clear.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Yes.
Because, you know, went to the Olympics.
Yes.
For a while. Because we had we got the contract for the Chinese fortune cookies. You
right.
Know?
Yes.
So we had to make up some stuff, you know.
Right.
This is what we do at the temple to make a few bob.
Right.
You know? You write stuff like, you know, you will finish either first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, or... You will have a good day, maybe. You write, when the wood duck goes to the pond, the swan will fly to the mountains. Just stuff like that.
Yes, okay.
They just lap it up.
Yes. Now, are you looking at a football match for us this week?
No.
No?
Yes, I watched it last night.
Right.
Yes, I saw that game. When, you know, it reminded me of history. When the undermanned and diminutive Macedonians got thumped by the well-armored, well-trained Greeks at the Battle of Ephesus, the Macedonian general declared, "What we lacked was a bit of BBC, that's big bodies at the contest."
Yes.
And he added, "Oralamus verticus nos."
Which is?
We coughed it up. Well, think about that.
Okay, we will think about that.
Stay tuned for the pre-game with Grandstand. It's good afternoon to Ian Covo.
Hey, go Cats, go
Billy
on.
Baxter.
Enjoy your football.
Greg Champion.
Come on, the Crows.
Torch
we'll go the Bloods tonight.
Thanks.